You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
This past week has been Homelessness Action Week in BC, so it is fitting that this week the BC Supreme Court struck down a Victoria bylaw aimed at preventing homeless people from setting up tents and sleeping in city parks. The court ruled Tuesday that the bylaw deprives homeless people of life, liberty, and security in violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Meanwhile, in Vancouver, activists continue to fight to protect the small amount of low-rent housing that remains. This battle is becoming more intense as the 2010 Olympics approach. Laura Track is a lawyer and housing campaigner with Pivot Legal Society, and she joins me by phone this morning. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Jane.
Now, I want to start with the ruling in Supreme Court this week. Was this a surprise decision?
It was a surprise decision. I mean, the case was very strong, and the lawyers that brought the case did a phenomenal job in constructing their argument. And actually, when you read the decision, it's hard to imagine how the judge could have come to any other decision. But we've been surprised and disappointed before, and so it was just a wonderful result to have come down this week, especially being in conjunction with Homeless Action Week, as you pointed out.
What does it mean for homeless people sleeping in tents or wanting to sleep in tents in Vancouver?
Well, the decision applies only to Victoria's bylaws. So the judge isn't able to declare all bylaws across Canada, for example, that prevent people from putting up shelters to protect themselves unconstitutional. Her judgment does only relate to the bylaws in Victoria, but Vancouver has similar bylaws, and Vancouver also has a very similar homelessness crisis. Now, the judge's findings and the judge's decision really relied on the fact that in Victoria, homeless people outnumber available shelter spaces. They simply have no choice but to sleep outside because there simply isn't anywhere else for them to go. And so what she found was that in that situation where people are by necessity sleeping outside, they have a constitutional right to some minimal kind of protection of themselves from the elements. She found that people are at extreme risk of life-threatening conditions like hypothermia if they're forced to sleep outside without any kind of protection at all. And so she found that the Charter protects their rights, because it protects their rights to life and security of the person, that they have some ability to shelter themselves. And in Vancouver, the situation is the same. Homeless people outnumber shelter spaces in Vancouver by more than 2-to-1. So again, here, people are, by necessity, sleeping outside, sleeping in parks and on other forms of public property. And so we believe that the judge's legal analysis should apply in Vancouver in the exact same way that it applies in Victoria. People must be able to protect themselves in some minimal way when they have no choice but to sleep outside.
Let's look at the current situation in the context of the Olympics now. How many units of housing have been lost since Vancouver won the bid?
Pivot and the Carnegie Community Action Project and other groups have looked into this question, and what they found earlier this year was that since Vancouver was awarded the Olympics in 2003, approximately 1,300 units of affordable housing have been lost. Now, these losses are due to a number of factors. Some buildings, the rent has increased outside of a range where people on income assistance can afford to pay those rents. People receive about $375 as the income portion of their social assistance checks. And when SRO buildings charge more than that, it becomes impossible for people receiving those welfare rates to pay those rents. As well, significant numbers of buildings have converted to tourist use, as well as to student-oriented accommodation. And so while these, not all of those 1,300 units represent buildings that have been closed, although a substantial number of those buildings have been closed, a lot of those rooms have just simply become inaccessible to people who are low-income or on social assistance.
And how much of this loss can be attributed to the Olympics coming?
Well, it's really difficult to attribute any loss to the Olympics specifically, but what we know about the Olympics is that it really is driving an increase in property values in Vancouver, and it's certainly a contributing factor to the loss of low-income property for people, because it just becomes uneconomic for these building operators to maintain these buildings at such low rents when the land all around them is becoming so much more valuable. And that increase in property values is certainly being driven by speculation related to the Olympic Games.
Now, the city has purchased 18 single-room occupancy, or SRO, hotels. How far has that gone to address the problem?
Well, the thing about purchasing SRO hotels is that on the one hand, it is a really great move because it takes those buildings out of the private market, and it means that they can't be lost to those factors that I was describing a moment ago. The rates can be stabilized, rates of rents can be stabilized, they won't be converted to other uses, and hopefully they'll be able to have support put in place so that people that are struggling with mental illness and addiction, for example, will be able to receive some of the help that they need in order to stabilize their lives. On the other hand, the city tends to count these as new units of housing, which of course they're not, because for the most part, these buildings were occupied by people already when the city purchased them. So while it is great that the city is doing this in order to stabilize the stock of low-income housing, this doesn't create new housing for people that are currently homeless.
Is social housing being built to address the problem?
There are investments in social housing. The latest updates that I've heard are that units are scheduled to be construction is scheduled to begin in September and October of this year, and that some units will be completed in mid to late 2010, social housing. So the pace of the development of social housing leaves a bit to be desired, leaves quite a lot to be desired, actually, in that it's still two winters away from being complete and doesn't do anything to address the needs of people who are currently homeless. But we are extremely glad, of course, that the government is investing in building social housing because it is so desperately in need, and it is the cornerstone, I believe, of addressing the homelessness crisis in Vancouver.
There's not only a homelessness crisis in Vancouver, but there's also a real problem with the quality of the kind of housing that's available to people on low incomes. What are the conditions like in downtown Eastside hotels for people who live there in those privately owned hotels?
That's so true. The quality of housing in the downtown Eastside is a huge concern. People tell us about the conditions in SROs as being nothing short of atrocious. People report infestations of bedbugs and cockroaches and rats in their apartments. For many people, they're dealing with situations where they don't have plumbing in their buildings, the toilets don't work, they don't have hot water or heat to shower with. The conditions are quite terrible. Electricity is sporadic at best. There are holes in the floors and in the ceilings. Windows don't get replaced if they're broken. And what's especially shocking about the conditions in many of the SROs is that the city has the power to inspect these buildings, to look at the conditions, to order repairs to be done. And if the owners don't do those repairs, the city also has the power to go into the buildings and do the repairs itself and bill the cost of those repairs back to the owner of the buildings. Now, this is a power that the city has never used, and I don't understand why they don't take advantage of these actually really progressive standards laws that Vancouver has in place to clean up these buildings, to do something for the residents of these buildings who are dealing with these just horrendous conditions, and to bill those costs back to the owners.
It is remarkable.
It really is. And even just minor enforcement of fire safety code, health and safety code, I have some numbers in front of me that show me that in 1999, the city did 106 of these enforcements. And in 2006, it did 6 of these enforcements. So it's a very strange phenomenon, and one that I certainly can't make much sense of, why the city doesn't use the powers that it has to improve the living conditions for these people.
One of the things that's happened in other cities that host the Olympics is that prior to the event, people are moved out of town mm-hmm. for the duration of the event. Is that a danger here?
It's certainly a concern, absolutely. A couple of months ago, I never would have believed that a city like Vancouver would tolerate something like that happening to its most vulnerable and marginalized citizens. But over the past couple of months, I've heard reports of people being offered one-way bus tickets out of the neighborhood. These are people struggling with addictions, with mental and physical disabilities. And they're telling us that they've been offered one-way bus tickets out of town to places like Kelowna or Kamloops or even into other provinces. And Rich Coleman, the Minister of Social Housing and Social Development in BC, was quoted in the newspaper over the summer as really defending this practice and saying that, well, Vancouver can't be expected to deal with the needs of all of its population, and there may be other places where people can go to have their needs met.
Who is offering the money?
I believe it's the province that's offering these one-way bus tickets to people. And some women at the downtown Eastside Women's Center have told me that they hear about this happening almost every day.
What do you hope to see happening over the coming year that would create a real solution for people living on the streets?
Well, what I'm hoping is, number one, that the City of Vancouver acknowledge this recent court decision from Victoria and acknowledge the fact that homeless people without any options but to sleep outside have the right to protect themselves from the elements with some kind of structure, be it stringing a tarp over themselves, putting up a tent, or even, I mean, something as minimal as a cardboard box would at this point fall afoul of the bylaws. And so I think that that's the first step. But of course, tents and tarps are not a solution to homelessness. The next sort of most minimal thing that we need is more shelter spaces so that people do have an option rather than being required to sleep outside. They do have some way of getting inside. And then, of course, the real piece is the affordable, social, stable, and supported long-term housing for people. And what gives me a lot of optimism is the fact that I think that Vancouverites really care about this issue. There was a survey that I saw published in one of the major papers in the last month or so that asked people what their number one priority for the city is. And a majority of people said that issues of affordable housing, homelessness, and poverty are their number one issues. A majority of Vancouverites identified that number one. And so I think that because the population takes these issues seriously, our government is starting to take these issues seriously as well and trying to explore ways to address these really important issues.
Thank you for joining us, Laura.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on, Jane.
I've been speaking with Laura Track. She's a lawyer and housing campaigner with Pivot Legal Society.